from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, Hong Kong stands up to China, horrific shootings and gun control, and the 35th anniversary of the Mexico City policy. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. And just a reminder that you can follow all things Family Research Council when you visit tonyperkins.com. There, you'll find out more about FRC's upcoming Values Voter Summit, happening October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C. Make plans to be one of the many Christians who stand up and say, "I vote my values." And when you're there, head over to Radio Row, shake my hand, and say hi. I hope you've been following the news out of Hong Kong as the citizens of that island stand in solidarity for their freedoms, waving American flags and singing hymns. Just last Sunday, over 1.7 million people peacefully protested in Hong Kong against China's policies regarding the island. FRC President Tony Perkins talked with Gordon Chang about America's influence in the region, but first, here's a clip of President Trump commenting on the situation in Hong Kong.
I think it would be very hard to deal if they do violence. I mean, if it's another Tiananmen Square, I think it's a very hard thing to do if there's violence. I'm president, but that's a little beyond me because I think there'd be, you know, I think there'd be tremendous political sentiment not to do something because I think we're going to end up doing a very good deal.
Joining me now to provide his analysis is Gordon Chang, columnist, blogger, television pundit, lawyer, and author of The Coming Collapse of China. Gordon, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Tony.
Gordon, the president there tying the issue of how China resolves the dispute with Hong Kong to trade talks with the U.S. How significant is that?
Well, it's significant in the sense that it puts Beijing on warning that the United States is going to impose sanctions on China if it were to use violence. And right now, the Communist Party came to power through violence. It maintains its power through violence. It, of course, wants to use violence in Hong Kong, but it won't if it believes that Trump and other leaders are going to impose those costs that would make it unacceptable for Beijing. So this is really going to be a question of what the United States is going to do, not what the Chinese leaders, if left alone, would do.
Now, Gordon, correct me if I'm wrong, but when 1.7 million people turned out, despite warnings not to march, under weather conditions that were not the greatest for demonstrations, 1.7 million people, despite the recent acts of violence, the pushback, this would suggest to me that the people of Hong Kong are committed to moving forward, demonstrating for their rights.
Oh, absolutely. And many people in Hong Kong, and this is two-thirds, probably closer to three-quarters, really believe that this is the last stand for their homeland. And so, therefore, you haven't heard from the mass of Hong Kongers much in the way of criticism of the younger demonstrators, the ones who have used aggressive tactics. What they've focused in on are the really aggressive tactics of the Hong Kong police, the intransigence of the Hong Kong government, especially Carrie Lam, the Hong Kong chief executive, and, of course, Beijing. So this is interesting, and it shows that there is resistance to what the political establishment in China wants.
Well, what's interesting to me is one of the elements, this is one of many elements, but I see Christian hymns being sung, Hallelujah to the Lord, and this being an element of the pushback. There's kind of almost a revivalist tone that's been taken in this demonstration for freedom.
Yes, yeah, so absolutely. And you hear that consistently in these big demonstrations. You also see American flags. The civic groups that have been running these demonstrations will play the Star Spangled Banner. You see Union Jacks. And there was even a sign 3 or 4 days ago which said, "We need the Second Amendment."
Again, you're the expert, so correct me if I'm wrong on this, Gordon, but I see this as probably one of the most significant points in modern Chinese time, because they're really at a fork in the road. If they crush Hong Kong, they're sending a message to the rest of the world that this their goal is world dominance. If they allow Hong Kong to continue to express itself and advocate for and obtain a certain element of democracy and freedom. That begins to unravel the Communist Party's chokehold on not only China, but other areas that they control.
I absolutely agree with you, Tony. If you look back at millennia of Chinese history, there have been countless rebellions, revolts, uprisings, but you've only seen two successful revolutions, one in 1911, 1912, and the other in 1949. What you're seeing in Hong Kong right now could be the start of the third Chinese revolution. A lot of Chinese regimes have unraveled from the outside in, and Hong Kong is on the periphery of Chinese soil. And what could happen inside the People's Republic itself would be that Chinese people who've got their own grievances, and many of those are indeed Christians, but people of their own grievances could take to the streets, and this could end up unraveling the political system and ending the rule of the Communist Party.
Because the only way that China, and again, you're the expert, but as I see it and understand it and appreciate it, the only way China could put that down, that type of demonstration from their own people, would be through violence.
Absolutely. There's no question about that, because this is an organization, the Communist Party is an organization that only really knows one thing. It's not rule of law. It's not people's participation. It is violence. And, you know, the reason why the younger kids, the demonstrators in Hong Kong, have used violence, and they've said this very openly, is that they've got these signs which say to Carrie Lam, "You have taught us that only violence works." The big demonstration on June 9th, 1 million people in the streets, did not move Carrie Lam. What moved her to suspend consideration of the extradition bill, which triggered these protests, was a violent protest on the following Wednesday, the 12th. After that, she then decided that she would make the only concession that she has made over these last couple months. That's interesting. The kids learned that, and they understood that it's only violence that will move the Communist Party of China. That's an unfortunate lesson. What we saw with 1.7 million people in the streets are the people of Hong Kong saying not to Carrie Lam or Beijing. They know that they can't convince them. What they are saying to the international community is that we are peaceful and you should support us.
So let me ask you this next question then, Gordon. If China does use violence, I mean, the president's already kind of teed this up a little bit, but how does the international community respond to that?
Well, it should respond by cutting off all trade with China. We should be taking steps to lead to the end of the Communist Party. Now, I think that we can avoid Beijing formally deploying its troops and using violence, but that would take clear statements from the President of the United States and other world leaders telling the Chinese that the consequences will be severe if they were to use force in Hong Kong. So that's why I would hope that President Trump gets behind the desk in the Oval Office, looks at a camera, and tells China that they cannot use force.
Can China, the Communist Party of China, maintain its control through this situation without the use of violence?
I don't think so. And the reason is that it's lost hearts and minds in Hong Kong. You've got a town of 7.4 million people. 2 million of those people hit the streets on June 16th. Yesterday in the rain, it was, you know, maybe a little bit less than 1.7 million. Who knows? But the point is, most of the people in Hong Kong have now decided that they are not going to compromise with Carrie Lam or Beijing. Beijing really has no choice in their own minds but to use force. And that's why it's so important that the world stops them from doing that.
So is this the Asian summer? I mean, are we seeing something happening here that is going to reverberate through that region?
I think so, Tony. I hope so, Tony. You know, right now things are a little bit confused, but I don't think that anything that Beijing has tried over the last 3 or 4 weeks has worked. They've tried to bring out the thugs. They've tried rougher police tactics. They've tried press conferences from Carrie Lam, the chief executive. All they've done is they have lost people's hearts and minds. When Carrie Lam did not give the permit for yesterday's demonstration to move from Victoria Park, what she did was she angered people in Hong Kong, so more people came out. And that's an indication that the tactics that Beijing is trying to use to quell the unrest just aren't working.
I find this fascinating because I do think you're right. I think we're at one of those pivotal moments. And in China is such a big player. I mean, they are a world power and certainly hoping to be, that how this unfolds could determine really the shaping of the next several decades globally.
And even longer than that, because China's influence has been so big. And clearly, if the Communist Party doesn't survive this, then there are all sorts of possible scenarios for China. I'm not saying that there are better scenarios, but at least we have the possibility of China moving in the right direction. It can't move in the right direction under Xi Jinping, and it can't move in the right direction under the Communist Party, full stop. So at least we have the possibility of a better world. If not, this is going to be an extremely difficult time in history.
Gordon, almost out of time, but how significant are the actions taken by the United States in determining this outcome?
Absolutely crucial. President Trump can stop the worst outcomes in China right now. If he doesn't speak clearly, then Xi Jinping will think that he has indeed a clear path to taking out the troops and putting them on the streets of Hong Kong. And that's going to be open warfare. This won't be Tiananmen, where it's just the slaughter of citizens. This will be open warfare, where blood will be spilled on both sides.
Hmm. Gordon Chang, as always, great to talk with you. I greatly appreciate your insights into what is a very, very important issue right now. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Gordon Chang, as well as the Values Voter Summit, when you visit tonyperkins.com. You can also sign up for our daily update. It's an email we send out sharing what's going on in Washington, D.C. Again, that's at tonyperkins.com. We'll be back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C., and I would like to invite you to join my wife, Luana, and I, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the garden tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
Are you concerned with the state of our nation? Do you want to protect and promote religious freedom, the sanctity of life, free speech, and our children's educations? Today we see a growing threat against our values on the news, on our college campuses, in our elementary schools, at our public libraries, and in our courts. Every year in Washington, D.C., thousands of conservatives attend FRC Action's Values Voters Summit. From October 11th to the 13th, come to our nation's capital to mingle with and hear from key conservatives who are bringing real change to Washington, D.C. And learn how you can too. FRC President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Bill Bennett, Dana Lash, Oliver North, and U.S. House and Senate leaders. The 2020 elections are right around the corner, so this is one weekend you won't want to miss. We provide free scholarships for students. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. In the wake of recent shootings in El Paso, Dayton, and Philadelphia, Democrats have been rolling out idea after idea to keep guns out of everyone's hands. In a moment, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins will share his thoughts. But first, here's former Housing and Urban Development Secretary Julian Castro.
My plan would combat white nationalism, domestic terrorism, by enacting gun safety legislation that would make it harder for guns to get into the hands of the wrong people.
Can you really, though, legislate and spend away that kind of ideology and thought and hate?
Well, I think that we can catch it sooner before it actually turns into violence.
Now, I have to give it to the CBS reporter, I believe his name is Ed O'Keefe, who asked the right question, the follow-up question. Do you really think you can legislate away violent behavior? Now, before I go any further in this discussion, for those that may not be aware of my background, let me put it all out there. I grew up with a gun or two in the house. My dad was not a big hunter, so guns were not, you know, a prominent part of our home. But from the age of 18, when I joined the Marine Corps, handling guns became almost a daily activity. I served as a police officer for about 10 years, and I'm still active in the law enforcement community. And I'm a strong Second Amendment supporter. Now, you should also know that I've dealt with, seen, encountered, arrested people for gun-related violence. I've also been the recipient of gun violence. As some of you know, 7 years ago, last week, in fact, Floyd Lee Corkins, inspired by the Southern Poverty Law Center, came into our office in Washington, D.C. with 100 rounds of ammunition with the goal of killing as many of our 80 team members as he could. Now, he shot one, our building manager, Leo Johnson. And while wounded, Leo was able to subdue Corkins and foiled his plan. Corkins was later convicted of domestic terrorism. With all that said, I'm willing to listen to a discussion about the inadequacies, real or perceived, of current gun control laws. With this condition, that we have a national conversation about not just the implements of violence, but the impetus as well. Let's be honest, all right? There are few genuinely safe places in America any longer. Schools, churches, shopping centers, businesses. Almost every place people gather have become targets for angry, addicted, primarily young men pumped up on violent video games and suffering from the absence of a moral core. At what point will we have the courage to acknowledge that as a nation we have a problem? Now, the growing frequency and scale of the armed atrocities that we are witnessing are symptomatic of a much deeper crisis than the shortage of gun control laws. By the way, it's dishonest and self-serving for Mr. Castro to claim that this crisis is the result of statements by President Trump about securing our southern border. He actually put out a TV ad last week saying that. How would he explain the mass shootings that took place in Orlando, Sandy Hook, San Bernardino, or Aurora during the Obama administration? Now, restricting the implements of violence while ignoring the causes is futile. Our nation's capital clearly illustrates this point with some of the most restrictive gun ownership laws in the country. And it has a gun murder rate of 18 per 100,000. Consider that as many as 80% of the gun-related crimes involved illegal guns. You get that? 80% of the gun-related crimes involved illegal guns, people who didn't obey the law to begin with. And do law-blocking gun ownership stop murder? Well, the United Kingdom, which already has strict laws on gun, the ownership of guns, began restricting the sale and possession of knives. Knives over 3 inches long last year after a rash of episodes of knife-related violence. You see, focusing on the tools misses the greater problem. You know, as Jesus observed in Matthew chapter 15, from the human heart comes murder. To talk about the why and not just the how requires us to go beyond the external environmental factors to focus on the internal aspect of morality. And we can't have an honest discussion about morality without including religion. That's why the left does not want to talk about this. See, our nation's founders understood the importance of faith and morality working hand in hand in our republic to restrain the worst of our human nature. George Washington, in his farewell address, written to the citizens of the United States at the end of his second and final term as president, included several pieces of instruction and advice for preserving America's prosperity, its security, and our happiness. He observed, quote, "Of all of the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports." Now, Washington was not alone in this conviction. John Adams, the second president of the United States, recognized the limitation of our laws. In speaking to the Massachusetts militia, President Adams said, quote, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and a religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." Now, some will be quick to say that nearly 225 years later, America has moved beyond faith, that inspired the builders of this nation. But that would be tragic. You see, to achieve security for our families and our communities while preserving the freedom that has made America great, we only have one option. Restore morality by renewing our commitment to the free exercise of religion. If we want to take guns out of the hands of young men, maybe we should stop prohibiting Bibles from being put into those hands when they're young children. Maybe we need to invite God back into the public square, into our schools, once again, to fill that moral void that has been created by kicking him out. If you're willing to have that conversation, those on the left, I'm willing to have a conversation about the inadequacy of any laws that we might have.
You can find out more about Tony's views on a number of topics when you visit tonyperkins.com. While you're there, look for ways that you can join us for this year's Values Voter Summit, coming up in October. I'll be there at Radio Row, and many of the guests you hear on this program will be there. You can find out more at tonyperkins.com. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
Are you looking for timely and honest coverage of the latest news? Do you find it difficult to sort out what is true and what is false from the media? Family Research Council is here to help. FRC President Tony Perkins' daily Washington Update email newsletter addresses the most important current events affecting religious freedom, the protection of life, marriage and family, and more, not only in Washington, but around the world. The Washington Update's daily articles cover a range of topics, from underreported stories about transgender activists' efforts to infiltrate our schools to updates on court cases fighting for religious freedom, parental rights, and the protection of life. Don't miss this critical, in-depth analysis of the day's most essential stories that are shaping our nation's future. Learn more and subscribe by visiting frc.org/update. Again, that's frc.org/update.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood was using taxpayer dollars to perform abortions? Recently, the Trump administration made changes to a healthcare policy called Title 10. The changes to this policy now eliminate the loopholes organizations like Planned Parenthood were using to receive taxpayer funding for abortions. Planned Parenthood was hiding behind terms like reproductive health care and services like cancer screenings and contraception distribution, while in reality, they were making money off of abortions. This shift in funding will benefit community health centers that provide needy families with family planning resources and health services, regardless of their ability to pay. It will also benefit pregnancy resource centers that provide care and free resources to women who may be experiencing an unplanned pregnancy. This policy decision is the right move to help and protect American lives. To learn more, visit frc.org/Title 10. That's frc.org/Title 10.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. 35 years ago this month, the Mexico City policy was implemented by President Ronald Reagan. The policy prevents taxpayer funds from being given to organizations that perform abortions or lobby for pro-abortion laws. Joining Tony Perkins to discuss his congressional resolution marking the anniversary of the policy is Republican Congressman Andy Biggs from Arizona.
Congressman Biggs, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Well, I want to get right to the heart of this. You know, you have over 80 co-sponsors of this. I think 82, may have more by now. What's the point in commemorating the 35th anniversary of the Mexico City policy?
Well, you have to realize how the pro-life movement remains in this country, number one. But number two, what President Reagan did, think of the context. You have the United Nations meeting in Mexico City on a population conference, and I've attended some of those, and always include abortion, as they call it, things like enforced pregnancy and those types of things, because they want to legitimize abortion internationally, and U.S. taxpayer dollars were going to help fund some of those abortions, and President Reagan said, no, we're not going to do it. And we're commemorating that now President Trump has reinstituted this policy, and it's an important statement on our foreign policy as well.
Now, President Trump has not only reinstated this policy, but expanded its reach, covering more foreign, more dollars going into foreign programs, and also catching up subcontractors that some may use to evade the restrictions on the law. So this administration is clearly embracing life in our foreign policy. And I assume that part of the goal here with this resolution that you've introduced is to bring awareness to this, because your colleagues on the other side of the aisle are trying to do away with the Mexico City policy.
Yes, that's exactly right, Tony. And policy 5 years ago, but only for a little over half of that time has it actually been in place. The Democrat administrations always come in, they set it aside. They always try to litigate this as well. They want to stop this. They want the U.S. to continue to provide funding internationally for abortions. And, you know, to believe in the sanctity of life, you have to tip your hat to this president and his administration, which, as you say, he's trying to go and actually expand it so it's actually effective, so we don't see the expansion of abortion at the cost of U.S. taxpayers.
So what's next with your resolution? How can people weigh in to help in this effort?
We're going to need to get some help to get this resolution brought to the floor. So it certainly wouldn't hurt to find the life Democrats, encourage them to sign on as co-sponsors, and also to let Speaker Pelosi know that this really needs to be before so we can vote on it.
All right. We'll certainly do that. Congressman Andy Biggs, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.